Next hour, it'll be open lines. This hour, it'll be your phone calls with David Pilaitis as we talk about missing 411, disappearing people. Don't miss it. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, David Pilaitis. David, would you briefly set up again the Henry McCabe story? And we're going to play the clip from an old television station I worked at in 1978, KSTP in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We're going to play their little news clip of his disappearance. You'll hear some of that audio you were talking about, but briefly set up that situation again.
Okay, so Henry was a revenue person for the state of Minnesota, straight arrow kind of guy, family man, never got in any trouble, was somebody that was always looked up to by people around him. He was out drinking with some friends. On September 7th, 2015, about 2:30 in the morning, he's dropped at a Holiday gas station by a friend at Central and Hackman. He's a resident of Mounds View, kind of a northern part of Minneapolis, St. Paul. His wife's name is Corrine. He calls his wife while he's out and he's not home. She is asleep. It goes to voicemail. His body's found November 2nd at a place called Rush Lake. Supposedly died from freshwater drowning.
Okay, let's listen to this report from KSTP in Minneapolis, St. Paul.
It's a voicemail unlike anything you've ever heard before. There are 2 minutes worth of noises, bizarre ones, but very little actual talking. Authorities confirmed the disturbing middle-of-the-night call came from Henry McCabe's cell phone. It was Labor Day, September 7th at 2:28 in the morning. McCabe's worried wife heard the message.
His and my cell phone connected.
Minnesota Community Policing Services is a nonprofit agency and acts as a go-between with police and the Liberian community. The leader is trying to help the family make some sense of this recording.
The growls turned to high-pitched moans.
Like he's moaning in pain.
Like moaning in pain.
The tortured grunts suddenly stop. There is silence. Then someone, either Henry or another person, says, "Stop it."
I try to picture where he was, what it might have been like, what circumstances would have made him sound like that.
The voicemail is in stark contrast to other articulate recordings of McCabe speaking at an event. He's a state auditor.
What is the justification? What is the right thing to do?
The message is one piece of evidence Moundsview police are reviewing. The police chief tells me even the FBI is analyzing the recording and voices for clues. The chief says the investigation took deputies here on Tuesday to Rice Creek Park, which borders New Brighton, Moundsview, and Fridley, all areas where McCabe was reported seen or a cell phone ping placed him. Ramsey County Water Patrol searched but came up empty. The tortured grunts suddenly stop. There is silence. Then someone, either Henry or another person, says, "Stop it."
I try to picture where he was, what it might have been like, what circumstances would have made him sound like that.
The voicemail is in stark contrast to other articulate recordings of McCabe speaking at an event. He's a state auditor.
What is the justification? What is the right thing to do?
The message is one piece of evidence Moundsview police are reviewing. The police chief tells me even the FBI is analyzing the recording and voices for clues. The chief says the investigation took deputies here on Tuesday to Rice Creek Park, which borders New Brighton, Moundsview, and Fridley, all areas where McCabe was reported seen or a cell phone ping placed him. Ramsey County Water Patrol searched but came up empty.
I've got to tell you, David, I've got chills running up and down my arms and spine listening to that. Those sounds, the moans and the growls, they're horrible.
It's definitely something that's unbelievably odd, because when his body was found, they said that there was no sign of injury, no torture. He just drowned, George.
Jeez. I'm wondering if in his course of being a state auditor, if he was stumbling across something or a company that they were auditing, and somebody got upset with him? I don't know.
Yeah, apparently the feeling of law enforcement is that it's just, quote-unquote, a standard freshwater drowning, nothing unusual other than the tape.
And the tape is not just a drowning. There's something weird going on there.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow. I would put that way up on your charts, my friend. That's a strange one.
It's odd. And can you imagine being the wife and hearing that?
Oh, my God. On your answering machine, and you know what came from his phone?
Yeah.
The question, too, is, I mean,
where he is, what happened to him for weeks?
I mean, did he initiate the call? Did somebody else do it? Were they playing a game, a sick game? Who knows?
Well, I, again, if you go back to what I've chronicled in the past, that there have been several times where people have disappeared being on the phone, and it's as though they're seeing something that scares them to death, or something else is happening, but there are these conversations that end suddenly, and the person's gone.
And I would assume police have no idea, no idea what that voice was.
Well, what is interesting, and I didn't bring it up, but I should have, is the FBI involvement. In my books, I explain that the FBI, in a strange way, shows up at these cases where they shouldn't even be involved.
Yes, you're right.
This isn't a case for the FBI. This is a local case of a missing guy, case that they don't normally investigate, but they're there to look into it. Now, they have a profiling team that looks at cases like this. When an agent goes out and monitors a case, looks into it, he writes a report. That report goes to the profiling team, and they look for other cases that have the similar elements, and they combine them. And that's how they gather, and they get to know if something is matching in another part of the country.
It's almost like they have their own X-Files when it has to do with this case, these cases.
For sure.
Let's go to the phones for you, David. Let's go to Rick. Truck driving in Illinois, first-time caller for us. Hi, Rick. Go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good. Thank you.
I just wanted to ask David if, in all of the victims, has he checked into like the medical histories of these to see if there's anything that's, you know, linking, like blood type, RH? Did they have surgeries? Because it sounds like most of them were in great shape physically, but I was just wondering if there was anything else that, you know, maybe tied them together.
Okay, and I would assume finding out medical information of these disappearing people would be difficult, David. Were there any kind of similarities of any problems or anything?
So federal law prohibits the dissemination of your medical history. So that's something you should protect, and you shouldn't give it out. And blood type is something that's not listed in any coroner's report, any document like that. There's nothing seen as interest or value there. There's no DNA information in a coroner's report. All those things are irrelevant towards the cause of death.
Jeez, strange. Rick, thanks. Let's go to Frank in Newport Beach, California now. Frank, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on the show. I have actually two stories of people I know personally who had kind of similar disappearance experiences on a college campus.
Love to hear it. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the first time, they both happened my freshman year of college. The first time, it was a buddy of mine from the dorms. We had all been out partying and stuff, and, you know, we had been drinking, but all of us were coherent, you know, we weren't like, you know, blackout drunk or anything.
Right.
And anyways, we're going back to the dorms at the end of the night, and one of my buddies had his bicycle with him. So the rest of us are walking, and he's kind of, you know, riding circles around us on his bike. Finally, he takes off. Once we get to campus, he takes off heading south towards the dorms. So we figure, okay, you know, we're going to get back to the dorms. He's going to be there waiting for us. We get back to the dorms, and he's not there. So we, you know, we wait around. We figure maybe he got food or something. Sorry. And so he doesn't turn up for like an hour. So we start calling him, texting him and stuff. And he, you know, no response. Finally, he answers the phone after about 2 hours. And all we hear is like super heavy breathing. And we're trying to talk to him like, hey, man, where are you? What's going on? It just super heavy breathing. And finally, we start hearing him. He's kind of like mumbling, you know, kind of mumbling, like we can't really make out what he's saying. And then he hangs up the phone. So we went back out and started looking for him, you know, around campus and stuff. And nothing. We couldn't find him. So the next day, he shows up around 1 p.m., comes back to the dorms, and he looks like crap. You know, he's same clothes as the night before, looks terrible. And we're like, dude, what happened? And he goes, I don't know. I woke up in a field like 6 miles north of campus. You know, the last time we saw him, he was biking south. He winds up 6 miles north. And he's like, yeah, I woke up in a field. My bike is gone. I have no idea what happened. And I just had to walk home. So to this day, we have no idea what happened to him.
What does your gut tell you?
I have no idea. I'm
just totally baffled on this one. Huh?
Yeah. Because we were all experienced with alcohol and stuff. Like, we knew how to handle our drinks. None of us were blacked out. We were all coherent. Otherwise, I would have figured, you know, maybe he was just super drunk and had no idea. But we saw him heading south onto campus. Like, he rode onto campus, which is well lit. There's police officers patrolling, you know, and he winds up far north. So super weird. Anyways, it gets weirder. About maybe 2 months later, my roommate doesn't come home after one night of partying.
Oh my God.
Which was normal for him. He had friends out that lived off campus who he would occasionally crash with at night, you know. And so, you know, he doesn't come home. I think, all right, he's just staying with friends. Next day, he still doesn't come back. Next morning, I figure, okay, maybe they got breakfast together. They're hanging out or whatever. By the afternoon, I'm starting to get weirded out here.
Yeah.
Sure enough, his friends that he would have been staying with come knock on my door, and they say, hey, man, have you seen so-and-so? And I go, no, I haven't seen him. I thought he was with you guys. Well, sure enough, they're like, dude, he left the party last night. None of us have seen him. He's not answering his phone. We don't know where he is. The last we heard from him, he posted a video like this. It's the app Snapchat where you post these short videos of yourself.
Right.
They're like, yeah, he posted a couple videos of him like riding his bike down a big street, just breathing super heavy. And we're like, what the hell? So it turns out we call the county sheriff, thinking, you know, we call the hospital, we call the sheriff, trying to figure out if they picked him up.
Right.
Sure enough, it turns out they picked him up about a half mile away from the field where my other buddy spent the night.
Whoa.
They picked him up a half mile further down the same road, driving a golf cart. He lost his bike, somehow wound up on a golf cart.
But he was okay.
Yeah, totally healthy and everything, yeah.
What state was this happening in?
This was Santa Barbara County, California.
Do you get a lot of cases in California, David?
You know, not too many.
No.
The national parks, yes. The biggest cluster of missing people in a national park is Yosemite, and it's the biggest cluster in the world. And then there's a series of disappearances all up and down the Sierras. There's some just outside of L.A. There's one real famous one involving a fireman named Mike Herdman, disappeared kind of between L.A. and Santa Barbara in that area, but not a lot in that coastal zone.
David, what would you recommend to people who are going to go camping in a state park or a federal park?
First of all, always carry a personal locator transponder. They cost between, say, $150 and $300. And what they do is, once you activate it, it sends a signal up to a satellite. That satellite sends a message to NOAA, our governmental agency. They call the search and rescue group or law enforcement group in the area where you activated, and they can come out and find you within 10 feet. I have never heard of somebody disappearing carrying a firearm and a personal locator beacon.
Right.
So
you would think anybody who went out in those areas would have a personal locator and maybe a gun.
Yeah.
I have heard some hikers, I've known a couple that would not go out unless they had a gun. They think it's foolish not to.
Well, yeah, it's all about your comfort zone. Personally, I'm very comfortable with a gun. I've taught a lot of people how to use a gun. I mean, there's a lot of things in the wilderness that a gun could stop, and not many other things will stop.
But if this stuff is unusual, if it's supernatural, gun's not going to help you at all.
And people ask me, well, why is the combination of the two important? I don't know. I'm just stating, and what I do in my books is I state a lot of facts. That's one of the facts. I can't find anybody missing that's carrying both those.
If for some reason, and this is weird, but you've got the personal locator on and it's beeping away and, you know, you're picked up by a satellite and they're able to track you at any given moment, and then you stumble into another dimension, for example, you're just gone, I would assume that the locator ends too, or would it continue from another dimension?
Well, let's even make it more a little simpler. Let's say you stumble into a cave.
Okay.
Stop transmitting. Even if you're under a thick canopy of trees, it's going to stop transmitting. So
it's going to get blocked, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take another call before the break, if we can. Let's go to Howard in Vancouver, Washington. I think that's one of the areas where the feet show up with a shoe on. Hi, Howard.
Hi, George and David. Most of the cases you've been describing are pretty inexplicable. But I had an experience when I was a young guy about 50 years ago that might explain at least a few of them.
All right.
We were hiking around the base of Mount St. Helens in Washington State here. It's about 40 miles north of me.
Was that way before the volcano?
Yeah, that was well before that. That happened in 80. This is back in the mid-60s.
Okay.
And we were walking across the meadow, and I suddenly my foot just went through the ground. I went clear up to my hip, and I managed to scramble and get out of there. And what we didn't realize or weren't really thinking about was that the entire area was saturated with these lava tubes, just honeycombed with them. Some of the longest ones in the world are there.
Wow.
And I managed to get out of that, but I could see how easily I could have just gone down in there just instantly, and no one had ever found me there.
Oh, my God.
And I suspect that people that have been hiking in some of these wilderness areas where there's been volcanic activity, you know, a lot of these things are totally uncharted. They're not on any maps. Nobody knows they're there. And some run close to the surface like that.
But Howard, when somebody doubled back to look for their friend, wouldn't they see the hole where the tube was?
Well, you would think so, unless the, you know, the rocks fell in on top of it or something, I would think. But there's one other thing, too. You're talking about these people that have disappeared near the rivers and streams.
Yeah.
But sometimes the current will undercut the bank by quite a ways. And you could just, you know, you could drop right to the surface there, too, and just disappear instantly. Now, one thing I wanted to throw out there was this boy that's missing up in Canada. If I were looking up there, I would be looking for things like old wells or sinkholes or anything of this nature.
Yeah, but this was on their property, and I'm sure the family knows exactly if they have those out there.
Well, you would think.
A sinkhole, you'd see that. You'd see the remains of it.
But an old well, sometimes they're covered, and you don't know what's there. That happens.
Well, yeah, but they'd know where to go check. That's my point.
Yeah, well, just an idea.
All right, thank you. Appreciate that. We're going to come back with more with David Politis. I would think if somebody fell down a lava tube, there'd be a hole there. You'd look at it and go, oh, my God, we just lost him, but you'd know where he went. We'll be back. Open lines next hour here on Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to come back and take final questions and your stories with David Politis as we talk about his work, Missing 411, an incredible series of books, and of course he's got a movie coming up on that too, so you want to make sure you're part of that when it comes out. Welcome back, Dave Politis with us. David, once the movie comes out, will people be able to get it from your website? How do they find it?
Well, that's a great question, and we're not sure what the distribution arm is going to be right now. We've had a couple interesting offers, But I really don't know right now, George. I wish I could explain it better,
okay.
But I don't.
All right, but when the time comes, of course, you will let us know, and we'll let everybody else know, too.
Thank you.
That's good. David, final calls just ahead here. If you were to summarize what's happening, and I you know how I always love to pin you down for what you think it is, but I'm not going to do that because it's too, I don't want to say confusing, but there's just too many possibilities out there, isn't there?
You know, there are, and just to clarify, one thing that one of the last callers asked was, you know, if the river undercuts the bank, the person will fall in. These people don't disappear near the river. They're never. Most of them are never even seen near a river or a body of water.
Right. They end up in there, but they disappear elsewhere.
Exactly. There's an entire series of Wisconsin students that have disappeared, and they were last seen in the middle of some type of establishment, a bar, a restaurant, and then all of a sudden, they're in the water dead. There's one person that has survived, and they said, the last thing I remember, I was dancing in the middle of a bar. I woke up floating down the middle of the river amongst ice pieces of ice. He was able to crawl out of the river and happened to crawl out right next to a hospital and lived. He doesn't remember how he got in the river, what got him in the river, nothing. And there's 4 hours lost in that.
4 hours missing time, gone.
Yep.
Really, it really is. There's something else going on. I mean, personally, I'm beginning to think that they're falling into some kind of time warp or dimension or something, that there may be these ley lines all over the planet and people somehow disappear, like the Bermuda Triangle, but they're just simply gone, especially if it happens so quickly and people don't hear or see anybody disappearing. They're just, you know, you're walking with somebody, they're a few feet behind you, you turn around, they're gone.
You know, I get those all the time in emails and things, and what I ask those people is I say, if that was happening and it was indiscriminate, then you or I would be walking down a mall or down the street in New York one day, and we'd see somebody in front of us, and they'd all of a sudden disappear. But we never, ever hear of any witnesses that can visually say that they saw it.
Saw it, no. Well, as you said, don't be last. All right, let's go to the calls again. Let us pick it up by going to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Mr. Politis, it's a privilege to speak to you. I was curious, here in North America, there are many indigenous tribes, and I'm curious concerning the missing person clusters that you talk about, if the native indigenous tribal elders, tribal shamans, etc., is there any tribal history that can contribute to the possibility of finding out what happened in these missing person clusters?
So one of my best friends is a Cheyenne Arapaho Native American chief. He just so happens to be a 40-year law enforcement man on top of that.
That helps.
Yeah, he's really got both sides of the spectrum covered. We talk about this kind of stuff all the time. And he says, well, Dave, you know, the Native Americans believe that they came from the stars. They're star people. And he said that when he goes, you know, after reading your books, he goes, I remember when I was a kid and we were in the middle of the wilderness camping, that we were always told never to leave the light of the campfire. And he says, you know, he goes, now I'm thinking, well, maybe they were really trying to send us another message, but they just didn't want to scare us. But they always said, no, you're safe by the light of the fire. Don't leave that. And there have been disappearances of Native Americans over the years. The biggest group ever is in Mesa Verde National Park. And if you look at the history of where they went, why they left, even the National Park Service can't answer that question.
Dave, has anybody reported large thunderbirds, large birds? These things are huge. They were indigenous to Native Americans. in their myths and stories, but has that come up at all? And I would assume if a large bird swoops down and picks somebody up, people are going to see it or hear it, the flapping something. But does that come up at all?
Well, not only what you said, but wouldn't the person that was picked up be screaming?
Oh, I would.
Yeah. You know, it's been brought up many times by people saying, well, is this a possibility? Well, if it, I'm not going to say no, it's never a possibility, because anything can be a possibility. But the reality is that if somebody picked up a small child, I think the kid would be screaming, number one. Number two, I think people in the area would see it if it was that large carrying
something. Yes, exactly. Now, are we getting reports of UFO sightings in the area where people disappear?
No, I wish it would be that simple, George.
It's not, is it?
No, it's not.
Darn. What else is reported that is unusual in terms of the area? Anything?
Weather.
Tell me about that.
In a high percentage of the stories, either as the disappearance seems to be occurring or immediately after the disappearance, bad weather sets into the area. And I mean, sometimes it's sudden. It's a sudden onset. Sometimes it can be fog. It could be extreme cold, rain, snow. And it inhibits the searchers at one way or another, or it inhibits the people that are there to continue to look. And weather is a continuing factor in many of these things.
Next up, we go to Kenneth in Whitewater, California. Kenneth, it's your turn, sir.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Kenneth.
It's good to talk to you again. My question for David was, are any psychics ever consulted on these cases? I'm a sensitive, and strange things that I have witnessed during my life. I'm 80 years old. So I have some questions as to paranormal events also. But I'm wondering if psychics are ever, talked to on these cases.
Psychics or remote viewers, David?
Great question. So I am not someone that would be bashful about using one, except I am very careful about who I share my information with and the competency of the person that I'm working with. Now, on remote viewers, I've sent email to some of the remote viewers you've interviewed on your show. They won't even answer the emails. And I'm not sure why. There's a one group where there's a part-time host to your show, and they called a remote viewing group, and they demanded money to do the work. And I wouldn't go to the victim's family and ask for the money.
No, that's inappropriate.
And unfortunately, I think that when you're dealing with victims and victims' families, you have to show a high level of professionalism and sincerity.
And caring.
Caring. And you can't be throwing random thoughts and ideas at families, because you quickly lose that. And again, I'm not adverse to using this kind, because I think that there's a place to use them. And I know that remote viewers have value. Thing is, apparently they don't want to do it.
I remember the case of the missing Sean Hornbeck from Missouri. And a psychic would be on a TV show and would come on my show. And she has since passed away. And I booted her off, by the way, prior to, obviously. But she told the family on national television that Sean Hornbeck, their son, was dead. And, I mean, the bereavement and the sadness and everything that they went through. Well, years later, the kid shows up as a teenager. He's found. He was being kept by someone, and he was able to finally break loose. Unbelievable story. But, I mean, to simply say willy-nilly, he's dead, and then the kid shows up years later. I mean, the family, can you imagine the horror they went through all those years, David?
Well, that's the premier example of why you've got to be really careful about what information you give the family and the people you're working with.
Roger is truck driving in Missouri. First-time caller for Raj. Go ahead, Roger.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. This is an honor and a pleasure.
Sure thing.
You know, you kind of stole it from me just a second ago when you said UFOs. I was wondering if these could be some type of abduction, because you said that a lot of them are physically fit and everything. And I wonder, like, do they keep the ones that are physically fit?
Uh-huh.
And, like, the poor lady and her child that were found naked, I always think of something like this. Were they getting examined and they found out that she was sick and that she was not a healthy specimen, so they kind of just sent her back to where they got her? And they, you know, I hate to say it, but she came back, she was deceased. But do you think that there might be some type of thing like that? Was there any type of marks found on them? Was there any type of, like, medical history where that she was found out that she did have something where they may have said, well, we don't want this type of person, we just want healthy specimens? And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it just seems weird. And could you, like you say, there's no marks where they've been drug off, there's nothing. There's no sound. It's just like they're there and they're gone. And then they return, just kind of like the same way. Boom, they're back.
Well, you cannot, Raj, you cannot rule out the possibility of UFO ET abductions. I mean, that's in the mix. It's in the grouping in terms of how high is it on the list. That's anybody's guess, but you can't rule that out. What I find interesting about this, David, is if it's ET related, they're starting to kill some of these people, and that's pretty unusual. What do you think?
You know, I think that whatever is happening here, especially with the water-related deaths, they know what this GHB is doing to the people. And by putting them in the water and having them drown, it's easy to just relinquish and say, hey, you know what, stupidity, they drowned in the water, too much drinking. It goes to plausible deniability. And I think that's the best example. Now, in the woods, the plausible deniability is hypothermia. In the old days, they used to say, well, he died from exhaustion. You don't hear that anymore. But I think that there's something. In the last 6 months, I've had 3 emails, and they all said this, and I thought, wow, that's weird that 3 people came up with it. And that is that they asked me, they said, well, Dave, there's no marks on the body. So I said, correct. There's no acts of violence on the body. Correct. And then about the third time we exchanged, they would say, well, it sounds like they stole their soul.
Stole their soul. Whoa. Donald in Kent, Ohio, welcome to the program. Hi, Donald.
Brother George, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for your program. And Brother Dave, I want to thank you for your courage and tenacity. Obviously, there is a religious component here. You know, I grew up Roman Catholic, and in our religion, we have what was called the incubus and the succubus that, you know, basically cause sleep paralysis. I don't want to go there right now. Where I want to go is in Psalm 74. The dark places of the earth are full of the habitations of cruelty. And in Revelation 5, no one in heaven or on the earth or under the earth was able to open up the scroll. So obviously you're talking about this water component, and I think there's also like a mineral component with rocks, fields, hills, mountains, things of that. The one gentleman brought up blood type. Nobody checks that out. They ought to do a hormone profile, a high level of adrenaline, the, you know, fight or flight hormone.
Mm-hmm.
There's other things that they can check on. Now, with UFOs in Mexico, they've been observed flying into volcanoes, and some people have seen UFOs fly into Mount Shasta. So,
sure.
You know, there's a lot of things. You're doing an excellent job. What about witness confusion? When these people disappeared, did people have, like, a faintness or a confusion, things of that nature?
I've never heard of that. The only thing that comes up along those lines is sometimes a person will tell their friends, you know, I don't feel good, and I'm going to go back to the car, or I'm going to go home, and that is the separation point between them and the others, and then they disappear.
And they're
gone.
And
that's come up quite a few times.
And they're gone. It's almost like something has triggered them, and you know, centered them to not feel well so they could walk away or break away. Maybe that's part of the MO.
Could be.
And it just seems like there has anybody disappeared in the middle of a group, right in the middle of the group, and they're gone?
Several times. In fact, there's a series of college-aged men in Wisconsin and Minnesota that disappeared almost under those exact circumstances in a bar. And their friend said, we never saw him leave the bar. And there's one case, a very famous case out of Columbus, Ohio. A medical school student was on the second floor, only one way in and out of this place, and it was filled with CCTV cameras. The detective said he watched the cameras for 24 hours over a three-day period, every camera, and he said the man never left the bar. He was never seen again either.
That's weird. It really is. David, your next project, what are you going to work on next? You don't stop. I know that.
Well, what I tell people is that, you know, some people get frustrated that I never say exactly what I'm thinking about what may be happening. And, George, to be an expert on UFOs or, you know, paranormal or whatever, it takes years of study.
Yes.
Well, I'm studying this one little segment of missing people, and every year or so, I'm finding another spoke in that wheel. And if I can delineate that spoke from everything else, it helps us to understand what is happening. And until I hit that wall where I say, hey, I can't find out anymore, I'm going to keep looking. So I'm still looking for another spoke, and I have no doubt that I'll find it in the next year. But for right now, I'm pretty satisfied that the guys going in the water, the people missing in rural areas, national parks, national forests, I'm solid there. I know what's happening, and we could almost track it that it's going to happen again.
Because you're so close to it, David, is it scary for you or not?
It's scary. It's very, very scary. When somebody goes missing, and I can almost say, hey, this is going to happen. It happened with Mike Herdman in just south of Santa Barbara, north of Los Angeles, a fireman that disappeared. I happened to be on a show, and they said, well, where's he going to be found? I said, well, if everything fits, he's going to be found on the hillside. You know, an area that had been searched many times before. Son of a gun, that's exactly
there he was. Wow. All right, David, my friend, stay in touch. And let us know when the movie's ready. We'll put a little clip up for you on the website. David Politis, of course, Missing 411. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, open lines on Coast to Coast AM.